Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. Approximately every 2,500 years, a new teacher brings a body of teaching to humanity that is suited to our needs at that particular time. Usually this takes place at the end of an age. Right now, as the age of Pisces declines and our solar system aligns with the constellation Aquarius, new energies are beginning to make themselves felt. As these Aquarian energies of sharing and justice stream into our planet, the need for change can be seen more clearly. A period of chaos ensues as the old order lessens its grip on humanity, and the impulse of sharing, justice and peace inspires us to move forward in evolution as a united group.
Well, good morning everybody, and welcome to this Friday session of special talks on various issues around the world. I'd like to start today with an article on inequality published in this November 19th, 2019's issue of Share International magazine. Following that, we'll read to you the second part of an article titled The Disciple by Art Jurians. So I'm starting off with this particular article by Sam Pizzigatti, and it's called Inequality is Literally Killing Us. Again and again, studies show that the richer, wealthy Americans become, the shorter the rest of us live. What do the folks at the US Census Bureau do between the census they run every 10 years? All sorts of annual surveys on everything from housing costs to retail sales. The most depressing of these, at least this century, may be the sampling that looks at the incomes average Americans are earning.
The latest Census Bureau income stats released in mid-September 2019 show that most Americans are running on a treadmill, getting nowhere fast. The nation's median household pocketed 2.3% fewer real dollars in 2018 than they earned in 2000. America's most affluent households have no such problem. Real incomes for the nation's top 5% of earners have increased 13% since 2000 to an average of $416,520. The new census numbers don't tell us how much our top 1% is pulling down, but Inland Revenue Service tax return data shows that top 1%ers are now pulling down over 20% of all household income, essentially triple their share from a half century ago.
Should we care about any of this? Is increasing income at the top having an impact on ordinary Americans? You could say so, suggests a just-released Government Accountability Office study, or for short, GAO. Rising inequality, this federal study makes clear, is killing us, literally. The disturbing new GAO research tracks how life has played out for Americans who happen to be between the ages of 51 and 61 in 1992. That cohort's wealthiest 20% turned out to do fairly well. Over three quarters of them, that is 75.5%, went on to find themselves still alive and kicking in 2014, the most recent year with full stats available. At the other end of the economic spectrum, it's a different story. Among Americans in the poorest 20% of this age group, under half, 47.6%, were still waking up every morning in 2014. In other words, the poorest of the Americans the GAO studied had just a 50-50 chance of living into 2014. The most affluent had a 3 in 4 chance. The inequality of life expectancy, as economist Gabrielle Zucman puts it, is exploding in the US.
The new GAO numbers ought to surprise no one. Over recent decades, a steady stream of studies have shown consistent links between rising inequality and shorter lifespans. The trends we see in the United States reflect similar dynamics worldwide, wherever income and wealth are concentrating. The more unequal a society becomes, the less healthy the society. On the other hand, the nations with the narrowest gaps between rich and poor turn out to have the longest lifespans. And the people living shorter lives don't just include poorer people. Middle-income people in deeply unequal societies live shorter lives than middle-income people in more equal societies.
What can explain how inequality makes this deadly impact? Well, we don't know for sure. But many epidemiologists, that's scientists who study the health of populations, point to the greater levels of stress in deeply unequal societies. That stress wears down our immune systems and leaves us more vulnerable to a wide variety of medical maladies. We have, of course, no pill we can take to eliminate inequality, but we can fight for public policies that more equally distribute America's income and wealth. Other nations have figured out how to better share the wealth. Why can't we? And this article was originally published on the Common Dreams website. And worldwide numbers, I'll give you the org for that. That is commondreams.org. It's very simple, isn't it? And worldwide numbers show the world's richest are getting even richer, leaving those who need the essentials of life desperately trying to find them.
So now on a different subject, this is part 2 of an article by Art Durance called The Disciple. And Art Durance lived from 1907 to 2002 and was a South African author on esoteric, spiritual, occult and religious subjects. He kindly gave Share International magazine permission to publish articles by him as they first appeared in his book titled Bridges. And they are inspiring and informative articles, presenting as they do a perspective which stretches from the ancient archives of the masters to our current times. And the article begins. It is only by a combination of hard work, intellectual unfoldment, steady aspiration and spiritual orientation that title to discipleship may be acquired. These qualities must, in addition, be supported by positive goodwill and an inner eye that is opening to the worlds of reality. The true disciple will not regard his work as a marvellous opportunity for spiritual advancement. This would be the selfish approach and could not lead to efficient service. The genuine worker will apply himself to his dedicated task with all the energy at his disposal, forgetful of his own personality, with the one purpose of contributing all that lies within him towards serving and the realisation of what's called the plan. This must inevitably also lead to his own progress, not towards self-satisfaction, but by evoking dormant capacities that will mould him into an ever more efficient instrument of service in the hands of the masters.
An essential requirement of the disciple is that he should ever retain an open mind, and that he should be ready to relinquish many of the pet theories as to life, his work and his concepts about the hidden worlds, when new aspects are revealed to him. He should ever remain receptive to unexpected new impressions and interpretations, and when these prove convincing, he must be prepared to reverse or adapt his preconceived ideas. He must consequently assume an expectant attitude, knowing that new visions will appear, new revelations will be made, and new versions of the truth will emerge to guide him along the way. Care should therefore be exercised that the temporary interpretation does not crystallize and develop into a barrier separating him from the unfolding truth and from the recognition of truer vision.
The life of the disciple is one of constant risks and dangers to which he or she is deliberately and willingly subjecting himself for spiritual unfoldment and for preparing himself for service. Disciples are severely tested, and only a pure heart, true love of his fellow beings and the practical and intelligent application of mental activity will qualify him to overcome his dilemmas. The emotional life in particular should be watched with quick care to prevent the generation of new glamours. The appearance of such glamours is not necessarily an indication of failure. Failure only occurs when the disciple identifies himself with such astral or emotional demonstrations and subsequently succumbs and reverses to past rhythms of life. In these instances, the master will not interfere, as these are problems which the disciple has to overcome by his own powers.
These obstacles are set in his path as tests of his consecration, will, and perseverance. He will either overcome these problems and move forward to the door of light where the master awaits him, or he will temporarily drop back to lower levels, where he will remain for a longer or shorter period till sufficient fresh forces have been gathered for a renewed assault against the obstructing barriers. The disciple must be willing to face life as he finds it at any given time, with the equipment at his disposal. He must then proceed to subordinate himself, his affairs, circumstances, and time to the needs of the day, with special reference to his group and the nature of their activities and requirements. When this is consciously undertaken, forgetting about himself, he will find that his personal affairs are miraculously taken care of and that his capacities for service are increasing beyond all expectation. It is through work, study, meditation, and service that the disciple progressively acquires a deeper insight into reality. It is through altruistic service rendered unstintingly that fresh powers and energies will be manifested in him, increasingly qualifying the server to greater efficiency and a wider range of work.
The nature of the disciple's work may sometimes draw public attention, but his spiritual reward will certainly not be commensurate to the publicity he requires. The man who quietly works behind the scenes, unknown, unrecognized, and unacclaimed, with sacrifice of all identity, is often the man who renders the greatest service to humanity. Such a man will receive no public homage, but will have the greater inner compensation of knowing that he has contributed towards the salvage of struggling souls, that he has helped with the rebuilding of lives, and that he has succeeded in generating some brighter light for focusing on humanity's path of return. During the early stages of his experience, the disciple as yet has very little self-confidence. The time will arrive, however, when he must assume that he has acquired more knowledge in some respects than is available to his less favoured brother, and when it therefore becomes his duty to share with the latter what he has already received, or to utilise his knowledge in some other way that will prove beneficial to others.
His first experience in this direction might lead to awkward situations or a feeling of clumsiness, but greater proficiency will be gained with practice. It is surprising how shrouded knowledge will well up when required, and there is much that will be more clearly understood when needed to present to others. Actually, the best way of learning is by teaching. Think humbly, speak wisely, and work ceaselessly. When the head and the heart of the disciple begin to function as a team, he automatically becomes spiritually magnetic. His radiation will make itself felt in his environment and will evoke response from others who will be attracted to him. This will consciously or unconsciously lead to the forming of his own little group, which may prove the initial stages of what, in later life, may be extended into a full-fledged esoteric group under his direction.
There are instances where disciples are sent into incarnation with a particular mandate. As a rule, they will be unaware of this mission, although in exceptional instances there may be a conviction of mission from early youth. Usually, however, disciples will be born with certain innate gifts and talents which will progressively develop into firmly rooted ideas and ideals, and combined with a brain responsive to these incentives. Normally, these men or women will unknowingly be guided into that field of human activity wherein they are destined to play their role, and in which they are meant to effect certain fundamental changes in accordance with hierarchical intent. As these disciples mentally mature and spiritually unfold, the work to be done will be felt or impressed on the mind as an irresistible urge. whether this work is to be political, financial, educational, scientific, or spiritual, they will unconsciously be guided by the masters, who will also see to it that the necessary doors are opened, contacts are arranged, and facilities are provided for implementing the work, without there being any evidence of this inner manipulation.
Although in exceptional instances, consciousness of such a mission may be developed, the usual procedure is that the disciple reacts and works in response to impression, but without being aware of the origin of such impression, which he regards as the products of his own mind. All these disciples are, however, characterized by their humanitarianism and goodwill and their determination to promote the well-being of humanity, each according to his specific capacities and in the environment where he has been placed. Their every effort will be motivated by their innate love for their fellow men. And this article was first published in Share International back in April 1995. And you can find out more in Art Gerianzi's book called Bridges, or you could look the website bridges-publishing.de. Now, this two-part article we included on the program today, not so much because we believe there are disciples listening, there may be, but because each of us will eventually be drawn towards working for the betterment of society. We hope that these articles have also helped you understand better what it means to be a disciple.
So to finish today's program, we would like to read out to you a couple of questions and answers, the replies being given by Benjamin Krem. And at every lecture he gave around the world and virtually every day of his life, Mr. Krem was asked numerous questions covering a vast range of topics. And so we draw on this large recorded resource and published answers provided by Benjamin Krem and his master and consecutive issues of Share International magazine. This first one is on transmission meditation. Why is transmission meditation or any meditation the best service? I don't recall ever having said that transmission meditation or meditation in general is the best service. Transmission meditation is above all service, but there are very many different forms of service. The difference between doing transmission as a form of service and some other form of service is that transmission meditation is a totally scientific meditation created by the masters, and so it is 100% effective and scientific. It is a way to serve the world, and probably the most potent way if one takes into account the time and expenditure of energy put into it. You could become a Mother Teresa and help people in terrible circumstances, illness, dying and so on. That is a very arduous form of service. The thing about transmission meditation is that it is a very light method and at the same time an extraordinarily potent form of service. It is only possible to introduce transmission meditation now because there are enough people in the world now who can make it possible.
The masters of the spiritual hierarchy are the custodians not only of the plan of evolution, but also the energies which make the plan possible. These energies released by the masters come from cosmic, solar, and extraplanetary sources and are very high in vibration. Before this time and before Maitreya's decision to return to the world, it was impossible for these energies to be released except through religious groups, for the most part, and therefore through the emotional and astral planes. So apart from advanced initiates in the world, the energies would be released through the astral planes, which necessarily limited the scope of their work to those levels and below. Only today are there sufficient numbers of disciples or aspirants to discipleship who can absorb these energies at least to some degree on the mental level rather than only on the astral emotional level. If the masters released the energies at the level of which they receive them, they would be too high and they would simply bounce off humanity. But now there are transmission meditation groups all over the world and the energies can be absorbed and stepped down to some level of the mental planes rather than the astral levels. This work runs parallel to the work of preparing the way for Maitreya and gives those involved a field of service second to none relative to the time and energy needed to do it. Nothing comparable, given the very little time required to do it, produces such a potency of result.
Thanks very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the program and I hope you can tune in next week. Goodbye.